Welcome to Hochoka Podcast.
What happens when a high school senior interviews a residential school administrator? We're here to find out. Hello, Mitake Epi, and welcome to Hochoka, here at the center of St. Joseph's Indian School's campus. I'm Scott Wooster.
And I am Basil Ilustar. I am a senior in the St. Joseph's High School program, and I attend the Chamberlain Public High School. Today, Scott and I will be your hosts.
We're glad you've joined our circle for part two of a three-part series called Detour Home, which covers various perspectives on residential living. Today, we talk with Sean Milner. Sean is an alumnus of the Baptist Children's Village. He came to the ministry at a young age with his three brothers and one sister and remained there for 18 years. He is the only former childcare resident to serve as executive director of the Baptist Children's Village, and he's the only one nationwide among all Southern Baptist childcare agencies. So, Sean, a warm Hochoka welcome. It's good to have you here.
Thank you, Scott. Thank you, Basil. I'm glad to be here.
It's good to have you here. So if you would, just as an introduction before I turn this thing over to the brains of the operation, Basil here, give us a thumbnail sketch of who you are, just your story, 5 minutes or less, who you are.
Okay. I'm Sean Milner. I am the executive director of the Baptist Children's Village. I came to the Baptist Children's Village when I was 5 years old because my mother and my father was not a good man. He was a habitual criminal, and he would get put in prison in one state, and when he would get out, he would move his family across the country. And that's why my oldest brother was born in Pensacola, Florida. My baby brother was born in Sacramento, California. And there was a day when I was very, very young, I was 2 years old, when he abandoned my mother and us five kids on a park bench in Sacramento, California. Wow. My baby brother was 5 days old.
Oh, boy.
My mother begged and got money to get train fare to get her small family back down to Port Gibson, Mississippi, which is where she was from. And my mother was a habitual alcoholic. She had a problem with alcohol, and life just got to be too big for her. And the shame of alcoholism and all of those things just became too large. And so I had my mother until I was a sophomore in college. But there was a day when I was 5 years old that life just got to be too big, and she cried out for help by pulling a trigger.
Mm-hmm.
I can remember the scene and pulling her back into the house. But it was then, I was five, that I had to come, me and my brothers and sisters, had to come live at the Baptist Children's Village, and that's where we remained.
Okay. And you were there for
18 years,
and then your life led immediately into working there, or where did you twist and turn from there?
Oh, okay. I graduated college. I stayed there for 18 years.
Yep.
And I graduated college, and when I graduated from college, I actually went to work for an insurance company. And while I worked for the insurance company, I thought, you know, I'm dealing with a lot of lawyers here, and they seem to be having a whole lot more fun on that side of the desk than I'm having on this side of the desk. So I changed my plans, and I went to law school, and I became a lawyer, and I practiced law and created my own law firm, and I practiced law for 23 years before the Children's Village 6 years ago needed a new executive director, and I had stayed involved with them through the years, and when they needed a new executive director, I couldn't say no.
That was the calling.
That was the calling.
Okay.
That's where you are now, right?
That's where I am now.
Nice. Okay, so that was a good start. First of all, a beautiful story. But would you mind if we played a game of rapid fire? So basically,
okay.
I'm just going to shoot you some questions, and you just got to answer them in a short sentence or in a word.
All right, I'll give it a shot.
Okay. So the best kind of music is?
Classic rock and roll.
Your favorite food?
Barbecue.
Warm weather or cold weather?
Warm.
What is successful to you?
Success is doing what you feel like you've been called to do, pursuing what you've been called to pursue. That is success.
What is failure to you?
Not trying or not getting back up.
What is the best advice you've ever been given?
Best advice I was ever given is that my past and my circumstances, don't let them define me.
Wow.
Go do what you're called to do, and don't let it drag you down.
What was the best advice you've ever given?
Best advice I've given? Don't let your past define you.
Oh, yeah.
That's Go do what you're called to do. You can do it.
What was the smartest thing you did?
Smartest?
In your life.
The smartest thing I did at a young age is when I decided, hey, I'm going to have to change the path that I'm on.
Yes.
If I want to go do something or be something. So the smartest thing that I ever did was changing my direction and realizing I'm going to have to do something different.
So what's the most regrettable thing you did?
The most regrettable thing I've ever done is when I was young, not being kind to some people that really needed to be kind. I needed to be kind to people that were my peers, people that maybe were not as strong as I was. From the time, and I'm 58 years old now, but I'll tell you, it still weighs on me the faces of a couple of people that I was not kind to. Most regrettable thing.
Okay.
That's rapid fire for you. We the last one deserved a longer explanation. I'm glad you gave that. But you nice job on that, Basil. You did a good job with rapid fire. So
those are quick questions. There.
Yeah, they were. And Basil was ripping them out. Are you anything you want further explanation on of anything that he said in there?
No, not really. You kind of gave a good answer for all of them. So.
Okay.
Yeah. Great.
That was a very acceptable.
All right.
Fun game. So originally, there's supposed to be two young ladies here with us.
Okay.
Larson and Mariah, they're in the same home as I am. Shout out to them. But we wanted to ask you some more serious questions, if that's fine with you.
Absolutely.
Okay. So during your life story, we just wanted to know how you manage life without a mother and a father at the same time.
Okay.
One thing we came up with.
Again, I grew up at the Children's Village, but I still had a relationship with my mother. The village made sure we had a relationship with our parents. Now, my father, he split. We never heard from him again. Don't know where he went or what he did. But my mother, even though she was an alcoholic, loved us very much, and we loved her. And so we still had a good relationship with her and the man that she lived with. He actually owned a donut shop. And so when we would visit with her, I actually grew up making Shipley donuts. And so even though things were bad, not everything is bad. And you enjoy and you build on what there is to build on, but you stay away from the bad. So dealing with my mom, there were a lot of challenges and things. But yes, we were very close to her and loved her dearly.
Nice. So my this is the question I came up with.
Okay.
Personally, I just wanted to know if there was one point in your life, whether you were 18 years old, you were 12 years old, you were 5, if there was one point in life you ever blamed yourself for your mother's doings,
for what she did?
Yes.
I don't think I ever blamed myself for what they did. However, I did take on the responsibility. I felt responsible for her. I felt responsible for what he did. So I won't say it was my fault that she did it, but everything that she did was now my responsibility. Mm. I wore the shame of it from her drinking and how she would act out sometimes. Somehow that made me think everybody was looking at me as if I'm the one that did that. Mm. So it was kind of like this transferred guilt, so to speak, if that makes sense. But no, I didn't think her drinking was my fault, but I thought I was responsible for her and responsible for how she lived and every action she took. And that was kind of heavy.
All right. So another question. Alcohol played a major role in your life.
Right.
So I just want to know if you've ever, let's just say, abused it in a way. Have you ever did the same thing your mother did?
No. Now, that's not to say that I had never drank when I was a kid and angry and mad at the world and it owed me and I was going to lash out. Yes, when I was a young teenager, I drank with my mom, if that sounds weird enough. It was a very dysfunctional situation. And so, but then I realized when I got to be probably 14, 15 years old, started leaning on the Lord, trying to figure out what my path was going to be, and I realized this is a path to nowhere. I'm going to end up like her. I'm going to end up like my sister. I'm going to end up like a lot of friends that I had that walked that path, I'm going to have to make a change. And so I was probably 14, 15 years old when I said, no more.
Wow. So I understand there were some siblings, three brothers and a sister, yes. If I'm not right. So where are they today and how are they doing?
My oldest brother, he manages a flooring company in Tupelo, Mississippi. He's very successful, children and grandchildren. And my sister, she, it's alcohol and drugs, the addictions run. And she got a little too mixed up in the drugs. She's still alive and living, but probably she has not met what she could have done. And alcohol and drugs was a big part of her not getting there. The brother just under her, very successful insurance company job.
Nice.
I kid him about not working at all, but he gets paid to do that. Nice home. Brother has a swimming pool in his backyard. My baby brother also ran the alcohol route and lived in the bars and things like that and made bad decisions, and he was shot and killed in 1995, actually over a bucket of chicken because of where he had allowed himself to go. And so that's where they all are.
Nice.
So, seeing as I hear you talking to Basil here, I'm thinking, you've told your story often. I'm sure I know yes. You. Even a couple of years ago, you were able to share that with our staff here at St. Joe's.
That's right.
I want to say it was during COVID, so
it was
reached us all through computer screens, actually, or some of us anyway. And you've told the story often and off. Often enough that there are take-home points in the story, and a couple of those you even gave him during the rapid fire, you know, the during the advice and what's regrettable, those kinds of things. But the most remarkable thing that I see is you have a kid who came from these dire circumstances, ends up in the school away from family, you know, for the most part, and grows up and by some measure of success, we talked about what success looks like, but right. By a measure of success, obviously, if you're functioning, you're working, you're in sobriety, you right. go to law school, get your degree, and then you run, you come back and you are in charge of the school, there's success there. But the bigger success, obviously, is underneath that. It's how do you go from a hard scrabble background like that, go through something where you don't have that familial support system, succeed, and then come back and look back down and say, I have to reach down to other people because they did the same to me.
Right. It starts, and I'll just tell you, the Lord played a lot in my life and worked a lot there. But I was introduced to him by people and house parents or case managers. And so when I decided to make the move, I began to start listening to different people. And one of the most difficult things I've ever done in my life was when I decided, okay, I'm going to have to let this side go, and I'm going to have to change friends, and I'm going to have to change, because you're going to become what you read and who you hang with.
Yeah.
That's what you're going to become. And I had so many friends on this side that I thought, hey, I'm going to have to change this. I can't do this anymore. So I listened to adults that actually cared about me and were trying to get me there. But it was very scary because I didn't know anybody over here.
Yeah.
And quite honestly, this group over here is way more accepting and way more friendly than this group over here. And so it was very scary. And so, but I decided, hey, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to have to do this because I do not want to end up where this is going. And so that was part of it. But it was the staff at the Children's Village. It was the house parents. That's why I love house parents. It was listening to them and beginning to trust them, because so much of life I had was just being angry and everybody staring at me, and it's all because I'm here, and, you know, my life is a statistic. I'm going to turn out like this and turn out like that. I mean, I had already flunked two grades. And so everybody was telling me this is where it's going. And so to change that and shift it was scary and difficult. And I still deal with a lot of that even today, is, okay, hey, do I deserve to be here? Mm-hmm. I think somebody calls it the imposter syndrome.
Right.
Or that,
yeah.
You know, am I supposed to be over here? It's kind of a real thing, but yeah. Hey, the Lord's taking care of me. I have a beautiful family and they love me. And you start dealing in reality as opposed to expectation or what you think people think. I don't know if that answered your question.
It does. And that brought you, I mean, something had to have happened 5-6 years ago when you said, enough of being a lawyer. I want to give back full time to do
yes.
what I'm doing here. And was it that continuation of what you felt as a kid and wanting to push your life ahead?
Absolutely. It was when that came, I had a very successful law firm. Lord was good to us. I had a very successful practice, but I stayed in touch with the village and I was still engaged with them. And so when they needed an executive director and they asked me about it, well, there's no way I could say no.
Right.
I mean, because I still very much loved it. I loved the kids, the staff. And so I thought, hey, I'm going to give it back now. I'm going to do what I can. And I hope it's a good job. Yeah. I hope it's a good job, but I'm going to do what I can to do for other people what was done for me, because I have a life now because of this place. So
right.
I'm going to give back.
Right.
Was the drive.
Yeah. And I just think, and I can't pass this up. Basil, you're the host, but I'm going to put you I'm going to put you on the hot seat. I'm curious because, you know, you don't have the same stories. Everybody has their own unique
right.
stories. There's no doubt about that. But there are a few parallels in there where you're growing up. And for our audience, Basil, you've been here since when?
Since first grade.
And you're now a senior, right?
Yes.
And you're getting ready to hopefully graduate in May.
Oh, I am graduating.
You are graduating. I love that. And you're working awfully hard to do it because the second semester of your junior year, you went home and you had the hardship kind of struggle thing that Sean talked about where grades became a problem and you got into some stuff that you regret now,
yes,
you know.
Very much.
And you've told me that several times. And are you okay with
visiting?
Fine. Yeah, I knew it would be, but I thought I'd better ask. But so there's those parallels. There's so much to draw from somebody who's been there before to hear from a story like that, where you know that there are going to be things that pull you off of your path. And in the indigenous culture and
yes.
Lakota culture, we call it the chunkuluta or the red road, right? And so you might fall off the side of that road from time to time, but you can always get back on that.
Yes.
And that's why I think it's just really, really neat to have you in the studio and to have Basil here at the same time. So I just want to say thank you to both of you for coming in and sharing your story,
right.
Thank
your
you
vision.
For having me.
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you for being the host on here today too, Basil. Because, and thanks for being a student at St. Joe's. You do have a good life ahead of you, and you know that, and you know that. It's not always going to be just that easy walk to get where you need to go, but you know that there are examples out there for you where you can get where you're headed.
I would like to say this, because you said something that's very important. My path after I decided, hey, I'm going to have to do this way, it was not straight.
Yeah.
It went like this.
Right.
Yeah.
There was falling down. There was failure. There was having to get back up and get it back straight. I mean, it winded. It was not... I don't want to present in any way that after I made the decision, it was a perfect life. No, it was very, very difficult. I had family members who spoke ill of me because they thought I was leaving the family and I was too good for them. Mm-hmm. I mean, there was a lot there. And so I would move in this direction or I would regress back to this place. So there was a lot of start and stop, and it wasn't a straight
yeah.
shot like that. So,
yeah.
I have one more question, actually.
Sure.
Now that you say that. So you said that you have some siblings that are successful and some siblings that aren't successful. Has there, in your family, have, like, your family looked down at the people that aren't successful?
No. And I'll say that we work very, very hard, but the resistance comes from the other side.
Yeah.
They'll want to see us. Don't want to be over here. So it's still something we're working on. It's still something we're working on with one sibling to see if we can connect. But drugs has messed things up so bad that it can be very, very difficult. But no, we're very, very open, want to rejoin the family, want that. But it's just the four of us that are left now.
Mm-hmm.
It's now just the four of us that are there. But that's a great question.
Oh, yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. So thank you both. Yeah, there you go. And thank you both for being here today on Ho-Choka. And we wish you the best with where you're headed after this, and love to have you back in the studio sometime.
I would love to be back.
Yeah, yeah. And seeing, I'll see you for another episode here pretty soon.
Great.
We'll put out another one.
Thank you, Basil. Appreciate the questions, and thanks for having me here today, Scott.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And thank you to all of our guests, our folks who joined us today here at Ho-Choka in the center of St. Joseph's Indian School campus, where we talk about all things related to Native American education today. Until the next time, stay centered.
We'll be there.